Hi, my name is Ansel Hurz. You're listening to a MediaHacker.org podcast. What follows here is an interview conducted with Rosa Clemente, the vice presidential Green Party candidate, on November 3rd, 2008, just one day before the election. I spoke to Ms. Clemente by phone last night from the KVRX studio here in Austin, Texas, on the program On the Fringe.
I believe we're joined on the line now by Rosa Clemente. She is the vice presidential candidate on the Green Party ticket, longtime hip-hop journalist and organizer, a major organizer behind the National Hip-Hop Political Convention, grew up in the Bronx. Sorry, Rosa, are you there with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. So I wanted to just ask you, on the eve of the election, how are you feeling? Obviously, Barack Obama is, I guess, ahead in the polls, and a lot of folks, I think, believe that he's going to go ahead and take the election tomorrow. You've been running on this campaign now for many months with Cynthia McKinney. How are you feeling as the Green Party candidate today?
I mean, I feel great. I feel the closer we get to tomorrow, the more members we're going to gain in the Green Party the day after the election. I'm feeling really excited, and I'm actually making my way to New York, even though I live in North Carolina and participated here in early voting on Sunday. New York is my hometown, and I'll be there. So, you know, I'm excited not only for tomorrow, but really the work that's going to happen and the growing of the Green Party, particularly in this next year.
And I know that a lot on the campaign trail, you've talked a lot about the issues facing youth in this country, particularly youth of color. And you've also said that the major candidates, as well as even other third party and independent candidates, have not really spoken to those issues. So I was wondering what kind of issues are you talking about, those issues that are facing the hip hop generation, and where does the Green Party stand on those?
You know, for the hip-hop generation, one of the most critical issues facing us is the prison industrial complex, mandatory minimums, police brutality, issues that fall under criminal justice, of course, but obviously the environment and the creation of jobs and a livable wage and access to higher education, where, I mean, we really believe in the Green Party that those who have access to higher education and may not be able to afford $40,000 a year should be able to access schools for free. I'm particularly concerned also about the 50% dropout rate of most of African American Latino students in this country. That's a pretty average across the country number. And the unemployment rate, of course, with African American men, which in Cincinnati has just hit about 58%. You know, and the death penalty, I think, is a critical issue for the hip-hop generation. There's been many groups like the Welfare Poets and Rebel Diaz, Immortal Technique, and the list goes on and on of artists who have been and the Welfare Poets against the death penalty, especially many of the cases in Texas. So also AIDS. I mean, it's amazing, right, that no one has mentioned AIDS. And the reality is that AIDS now affects African American, Latina, heterosexual women the most in this country, and that in some urban environments, 1 out of 12 young people have the virus. And in fact, in the District of Columbia, 1 out of 9 African Americans have the virus, and some may not know it. So the AIDS, and as a Latina, lastly, immigration. You know, both candidates support building a wall. Both candidates haven't talked against deportation or the breaking up of families. And the Green Party platform, as me and Cynthia see it, is amnesty for immigrants. So, you know, those are issues that interconnect multi-generationally, and I think that's something that the hip-hop generation has really always been a part of, particularly our generational elders within the 60s and 70s who have been mentors to many of us who consider ourselves hip-hop activists or journalists.
and here in Texas, as well as around the country, we've seen an increased presence of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Right here in Austin, ICE has moved into the Travis County Jail and actually set up a permanent office and presence at which they're screening almost everybody who comes in. There's been a 400% rise in, I believe, the number of deportations or actually holds on folks who are coming into the jail. Many of them have only committed misdemeanor crimes. So we're facing that issue here in Austin. Right. I was wondering, what is your stand or position on immigration in general? Are you opposed outright to the border wall? Barack Obama has said that he would maybe do it differently or something like that. Obviously, in Texas here, we have border communities across the board opposed to this wall.
Right.
How would the Green Party address immigration and also the continuing hysteria and oppression of immigrants in this country?
Well, of course, we're opposed to the wall. I mean, it's you know, you can't be opposed to the wall in Palestine and then not be opposed to the wall in the United States of America, especially as progressive people and left people in this country. But the, you know, one of the other things around immigration, especially as it pertains to particularly Latino immigrants and Latina immigrants, is repealing of NAFTA and CAFTA and these free trade agreements. You know, I was part of the battle in Seattle in 1999 because I knew as a college student that these free trade agreements, what would come down the pipeline. And I think many Latinos and Latinas leaving Latin America in general are being forced to come to this country. I don't think everybody necessarily wants to leave Mexico or Honduras or these homelands are being more forced to because of these free trade agreements. And of course, as a woman, you know, the missing subject in all this is I'm sure the sexual assault that women that are being detained are going through. I mean, we've read the cases of immigrants who've been detained, women who have miscarried or who've been beaten. We know these cases, you know, there's been so many of them, especially in Texas and in New Jersey and some of these other states. But as someone who was down during 10 days after Hurricane Katrina and the Little Ivy breach, you know, I had to also, as a Puerto Rican, since we are born American citizens and have often, as young Puerto Ricans, have not come out forcefully enough against immigration rights for other Latino brothers and sisters in this country, that when I was down there, I was immediately shocked that in the Baton Rouge shelter, there was ICE there, and people were being asked their immigration status, and there was no translation for the particularly Vietnamese or the Spanish-speaking survivors from the hurricane and the levee breach. So for the last 3 years, that's been something that I have really, I guess, spoken out more than in the past. So, I mean, those are issues. And, of course, as it relates to immigrants that come from Eastern Europe or Africa or other countries, I don't, you know, understand why it costs $1,200 to begin the paperwork to fill out your papers to become an American citizen. I find that as almost the poll taxes that were imposed on African Americans in the early 50s and, well, the early 60s when we got the right to vote.
Okay, and so the main issue on the campaign lately, at least between the two major parties, has been the economy here in the United States. Obviously, there was a lot of fraud that went on, a lot of taking advantage of people of color in this country to through the subprime mortgage crisis, and then we've had now this taxpayer bailout of these huge banks. I'm wondering what is the Green Party's take on that issue?
Well, as it regards the bailout, we spoke forcefully against that. And, you know, it's been the Green Party for a couple of years that's been talking about predatory lending. Not that they were the first ones to talk about it. Really, predatory lending and that issue around predatory lending became a big issue, actually, when I was in Brooklyn, New York, working for an organization by the name of Central Brooklyn Partnership. And the executive director there, Mark Winston Griffith, who's now a fellow at the Drum Major Institute in New York, I think he was maybe not coined the term, but definitely one of the first people out there. And that was in 2002. And I lived in Brooklyn till 2007. And I knew something was wrong when people on a block where the average family makes $22,000 a year were moving into $500,000 houses and told that they could afford them. And in fact, I have family members, four in fact, that have all lost their houses in the last year due to subprime mortgage. And they had the information, you know, and they still got caught up. So not only for stopping foreclosures and a moratorium on foreclosures, but you know, this bailout, we got to know by now that the $750 billion, which is projected to be $2 trillion of taxpayer money, bailed out Wall Street. And last week, in a recent report CNN did, they said that 50% of the money given to the banks was used to pay off stockholders. And maybe not the golden parachutes, but people got paid. And the people who got paid were not working class people in this country. And what's going to happen is if we can't repeal this or take it back, that we're going to lose more resources than local communities. And local communities are already suffering from libraries having to be closed, to streets not being fixed, to bus routes being cut. And we working class people are paying for that. Cynthia in her essay Seize the Time laid out 10 points. And some of these points I just mentioned, including repealing the permanent Bush tax cuts, you know, so that's some of our stance on this. But the Green Party in general has always had a principle around economic sustainability and what that can look like. We have to look at the Federal Reserve. Why does that exist? You know, we need to talk about what we've seen is the nationalization of banks, but not in, you know, in the interests of working class people in this country.
And what do you make of this latest attack on Barack Obama as being a socialist? I know that socialists around the country have kind of been speaking out and saying, well, you know, Barack Obama's not a socialist, but not only that, there's nothing wrong with being a socialist. What do you make of that line of attack that McCain has been pushing lately?
I mean, in that pragmatically, if I can be a little bit objective, It's a scare tactic. That goes back to the 1940s when black people were communists and Paul Robeson and W.E.B. Du Bois. And then when Fannie Lou Hamer stood up on the Democratic convention in the 60s, she was a communist. So, you know, that is not only it's more of a racial scare tactic. I know some people might not see it, but if you look back in the history of our country, the attacks always happen first with black people. So whether it's the communist attack that leads to the McCarthy era, whether it's the Patriot Act being passed that affects mostly Arab and Muslims in this country, or the counterintelligence program that was out there to stop the anti-war movement and the Black Power movement, but obviously it was mostly Black Panthers and really radical people in this country that were murdered or still are political prisoners in this country because of their activities, political activities in the 60s or 70s. So that's definitely a racial component to that. Socialism, communism, that's Fidel Castro, that's bad, you know. And actually, I guess for real socialists in this country, they're not happy that Barack Obama has become a socialist. Because when we look at his policies, we know they're not in the interests of the majority of people in the country. And I don't think that true socialists are happy right now with that. And I see it as a complete racial attack against him. And if Cynthia was leading and she was up there, they'd be saying the same thing about her. They'd probably be saying worse things about us.
So you've also said that one of your goals with the Green Party campaign this year has been to reach close to 50% of unregistered youth voters. And I was wondering, have you been able to do that? What has the Green Party outreach at the grassroots level been able to do in this election season?
Yeah, well, I didn't say 50% to get them to vote as much as I said that they need to be brought back into the fold of electoral politics.
Right.
Because the reality is that the Green Party is going through, has been going through some organizational changes and a little bit of growing pains with me and Cynthia running. And we don't have the resources or the ability to put out this huge get out the vote drive, which actually is okay because I see the Green Party as a movement, not as every 4 years and the craziness of particularly young people being inundated with rock the vote, respect my vote, vote or die, do this. You know, if you don't vote, you're going to die. If you don't vote, it's all over, as opposed to showing them, first, all the candidates, the critical issues, and that sometimes withholding the vote is also a tactic that can be used well. But in this election, what I've tried to do is definitely be in the communities that I know still were not being reached. And I don't mean that everybody I've spoken to was not registered to vote or hadn't already made a choice, but there is definitely a class of people in this country, and I don't mean it in, I should more say a group of people in this country, that see electoral politics as nothing. It never affects me. I don't need to vote. I don't have to go out and vote. And although this might be the biggest election coming up in history, there's still maybe 50 million Americans who did not register to vote and won't vote. And that in itself, when you compare it to other countries' turnout rate, like in Puerto Rico, when there's an election, 87% of the electorate votes. It's not a joke. It is because also many officials will be held accountable for their actions because 87% of the electorate voted. So that was my goal. And, you know, I don't know if we reached it. I have moments where I think we did. I have moments where I think we didn't. But I know that if we didn't reach it, it wasn't for lack of effort from Green Party people in this country. It was because we have been completely black, brown, and whited out of not only mainstream media, but so-called progressive and left media in this country. And within the third-party politics, if people were to really break it down and look, let's see how many times Ralph Nader was covered and compare that to Cynthia McKinney. A recent report from Fairness, Accuracy, and Reporting says there's been 87 mentions or 3 minutes given to Green Party, to third-party candidates. And I think Cynthia she literally got 3 mentions and Nader got 86. I mean, so within the third-party political movement, there's a lot of liberal white racism that really needs to be addressed. And I think the Green Party is on the forefront of that within third-party politics throughout this country.
Well, I guess, why do you think that is, that the liberal/left media has not covered or your campaign, McKinney's campaign? Why is it that Nader, who's running for, I don't know, the third or fourth or fifth time on the independent platform and not with the support of the entire Green Party, why is it that you think that he's getting this attention, but you and Cynthia McKinney have not, even in the alternative and independent press?
Because he's a man. And I think that Ralph is not, I wouldn't completely say he's a white man. He was born in Lebanon, but in this country, he's been identified as a white man. And same with Chuck Baldwin and Bob Barr and Ron Paul, you know? It's amazing. It's because we're first, because we're people of color, second, because we're women. Because if there were 2 white women running for the Green Party, there would be significantly more coverage, particularly from many of the white women in the left movement who run magazines, whether it's or news outlets. You know, often we just say white men, and what? Yeah, but let's look at the white women who have some power as media makers in America right now on the left and progressive. Let's look at Katrina Van Hundel from The Nation. Let's look at Arianna Huffington from the Huffington Post. Let's look at Jane Fonda, Gloria Steinem, Miss Magazine, Women's Media Center, In These Times, Bitch Magazine. I mean, you know, really.
Don't fret, my dears. KVRX will be back on right now.
Which have been Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! And Laura Flanders from Grit TV and The Nation. And you know, that they don't get prizes for that. That's their job. That's what they're supposed to be doing. So not only have we been abandoned by, yes, traditional kind of black and Latino radio in this country, but then progressive and independent media has completely dropped the ball. And the fact that you have so-called progressives in this country tripping over their feet for Barack Obama without an analysis. Like, if you're going to vote, go ahead. But if you're not going to have an analysis, and then you're going to turn around and say people like the Green Party, we're fringe, we're crazy. What are you talking about? Every issue that we talk about, if you poll the majority of American people, they say that that's what they want. Just because a Democratic person uses a great marketing campaign to make you think he's going to give you all of that, or the party in general. I mean, I don't understand how then you are mad at Nancy Pelosi in 2006 for not stopping the war, and then you don't look at a true anti-war candidate. So for me, I'm used to the white men dissing us. I'm used to the mainstream, you know, but I'm not used to feminists, National Organization for Women of Feminist Majority, not even mentioning that we exist. You want to talk about empowering young women of color? How more empowering is it than to see not only a symbol, but to see two women of color, African-American and Latino, running for still a majority white party, the Green Party? And the fact that you don't even mention it historically as a historical fact, and then let the people who read your information or watch your show or listen to your radio make an informed decision, to me, it's hypocritical, and it speaks to down and outright oppression of women of color in this country.
Absolutely. And I think here in Austin, we've seen very little coverage just locally of the Green Party as well. And I think that goes all the way from the corporate media through the independent or so-called progressive media right down here into local media markets. And kind of on that note, I wanted to ask about the hip-hop community and what role hip-hop has played in this election season. There are a lot of kind of big-name hip-hop artists, Nas, DJ Premier, and Ludacris, and a few others who are supporting Barack Obama in a big way. And yet, Obama is somebody who has said that he wants to put 50,000 cops on the streets here, here in this country, for example. So what kind of support have you received from hip-hop artists, and how do you think the hip-hop community has interacted in this election season?
Well, you know, when people think about hip-hop, they often think of definitely the rappers or the MCs, which is important. But hip-hop is literally made of five elements, and one of them is a DJ, and the beat break dancers, the graffiti artists, the rappers, and then this fifth kind of journalism, activist knowledge, politics. You know, it's been the same. I think most of the hip-hop leadership is tripping over Obama without a critical analysis. Now, certain rappers, like, let's say, Jay-Z or Puff Daddy, these are multimillionaires. These are not people with $1 million. You have people with $20, $30, $40, $50 million. You know, I never expect them to support a so-called a different person. I think the reason they're supporting Obama is because they truly believe in what he's saying, and they truly support him, and that's their right. But then there are other rappers in the community, right, like groups like Rebel Diaz or Hassan Salam, NY Oil, and one of Dead Prez, even Talib Kweli, who actually is probably well known. He doesn't vote, and he's really made that clear in his political life. He's not a voter, will never vote. But even in a recent mixtape where a lot of rappers were talking about Obama, he at least talked about us and mentioned us. Some of all our parts from Texas and California did a video for us. So as many have supported Obama, many have supported us. But within hip-hop, there is definitely a class line. There's the true hip-hop that comes from poor people in this country, black and brown poor people that speak to that. And then there's the rap and the music that's used for marketing, and you know that hip-hop is now just something to be used. On the leadership end, there's been many of my, I guess they may be former colleagues now, that I never expected them to fully endorse a Rosa Clemente because I'm running on a hip-hop political agenda. But I expected them to let their constituents know that there's a person that's running that has taken the hip-hop political agenda on a national level. And all I can say about that is I think a lot of these groups are funded. They're nonprofit groups. Many of them are funded by George Soros. And, I mean, that's not a conspiracy. George Soros funds OSI and Campus Progress and pretty much every kind of nonprofit that's huge like that. And George Soros has been pretty clear that Barack Obama is his choice. And I think that, I'm sure, trickles down and money gets cut. And if you support Obama, you're probably more likely to get a check than supporting a Cynthia McKinney or Rosa Clemente. Or, in general, Green Party people, because there's 248 Greens running. So it's not like they're just not supporting me and Cynthia. They're not supporting the Green Party because people are telling them that it's not in their best interest to do that. And so hip-hop itself is going through a transition, and I think I've made a side of hip-hop that is now maybe put a line in the sand. Some will choose that moderate, elite, middle-class hip-hop life, and then the other ones of us will be there as community organizers and activists and using the vote to try and fight, unfortunately, some of the people that look like us within our own generation. And I mean fight politically, no violence.
Right.
We're a peace party.
So also in an interview with Democracy Now! Recently, you were there on the program with Matt Gonzalez, who is the vice presidential candidate with Nader. And you mentioned at one point that you felt that the Nader candidacy is maybe a little bit more reformist on some uh-huh. issues. I think a lot of folks don't necessarily see a distinction between the Green Party and Ralph Nader's candidacy. So right. Can you talk about some of these differences and the way that maybe Nader is a more reformist candidate on issues of prison and police and other issues versus the McKinney candidacy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I definitely have the utmost respect for Ralph Nader. I voted for him in 2000, and I voted for David Cobb in 2004, and I was voting for Cynthia McKinney in 2008. I've been a Green Party member way before this run, and I think that's critical that Green Party members know that there are young people of color like me that have been in the party for 10 years, you know, and we haven't. Maybe it took until now to find our footing in that. But look, I think that the Independent Party and other parties do have reformists, more reform-minded. Where I seek to try to abolish the prison industrial complex, they seek to make it a little bit more humane. I don't think that locking people up who have drug problems or stealing to get food or whatever, these nonviolent crimes deserve to be locked up and families deserve to be broken up. I believe that Palestinian people want a one-state solution, and the Green Party supports what the Palestinian people have put, not a two-state solution that other parties support. You know, and lastly, this idea of social justice in the Green Party also is connected to racial justice. And, you know, just because a party's third party, if it does not reflect what the majority of the country is looking like, especially as it relates to my generation, then they're not taking us seriously. And they're not taking our issues seriously. And I think that the Green Party made a very good decision to pick Cynthia and me. But particularly, I think Cynthia made a good decision in picking me. my generation, particularly Latinos, we will be the majority very soon in this country. And if people cannot acknowledge that and people can't see leadership coming from two women of color, then they're retrograde. And what they're putting out there is not progressive or ahead of the curve. And I think the Green Party is way ahead in that, which is why we are going to grow exponentially right after this election. I can feel it already.
How what is your sense in general of how third party candidacies like yours interface with social justice movements on the ground? Because I think I know folks in my community here in Austin who are grassroots organizers who really just don't feel engaged with electoral politics at all. And it's not because they're apathetic, but just because they see the hurdles in trying to get onto ballots. They see the election system as often rigged or, you know, with electronic machines just unreliable, and they see it as more important for them to just focus on their own communities. What would you say to those folks, and how do you see your campaign interacting with movements on the ground here in this country?
Well, I mean, I know that, you know, my campaign is all about that. I'm a community organizer and activist first. Like, I'm not going to live and die by a vote, and I'm not going to make my life about holding office for the rest of my life. So, you know, with that, I think that those of us who are community organizers and activists on a very local level who feel disengaged, I respect that, you know, but I also say at the end of the day, the public policy that's being created is the public policy that you end up fighting about and that you end up trying to fight against, whether it's public policy that continues to incarcerate people or public policy that takes sex education out of the classroom, you know. And I feel that if someone is going to run for public office and be a servant to the people, then we have the utmost responsibility to hold them accountable. And accountability is just not by voting them in or out, but by literally making sure and being in their faces, knowing you cannot represent this part of this country if that is your politics. We will not allow that. I mean, community organizers, to me, in an electoral political sense, are also the lobbyists for our community. We're the voices that can bridge those two seemingly different paradigms in America. We can go in both places. And I began that in college. I worked for the New York State Assembly. I stayed there for 2 years in various capacities because I wanted to learn what they were doing with all our tax money. And did I learn a lesson about the corruptness? And I was working for Democrats. I've never worked for a Republican. So I understood that when I was like 22. And then I was mentored by someone, Richie Perez, who said, no matter what, they are accountable to us. Whether people vote for them or not, they choose to be in our community as public servants. We have to hold them accountable. And I think that's what community organizers and activists have to do. And if anything, people should really listen to Malcolm X's speech, The Ballot or the Bullet, where he puts that very clearly out there. The speech could be said today right now, and it's completely relevant. For those who choose not to engage in electoral politics, I think that's a choice, and I respect that. But if you do that, then you have to double up the work on the community organizing tip, too. So, you know, that's what I would say to those on the ground that feel that disaffected and disenfranchised.
We're also joined in the studio by Bill Holloway. He's the co-chair here of the Travis County Green Party right here in Austin. And, Bill, did you just want to add on to that?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk for a second about how we kind of approach these issues here in Travis County. I think one of them, I mean, first of all, the Green Party, of course, one of the distinctions, and this is true in other political parties too, but it's prominent in the Green Party, that we're not just people who are putting a political party together, we're also activists. I mean, each one of us in the local party here, and this is true around the nation, are also out in the street organizing. I've been doing that. I started my political life, activist life, 20 years ago. And so the Green Party, kind of the purpose and the approach that we take here in Travis County is to be the electoral arm for the broader movement for social justice, for peace. And one of the ways we tackle that here is coalition work. We work closely with Gray Panthers, we work with BATPAC, we work with Stop Domain Subsidies, other accountability organizations we organized for Props 1 and 2 for Open Government and SOS. And that work's going to continue. So that's kind of a part, that's how we kind of approach the outreach here.
And so, Rosa, I also wanted to ask, there have been kind of scattered reports around the country of vote flipping, of people having a lot of difficulty with electronic voting machines, and just I think a lot of people don't have confidence necessarily that, the votes are all going to be actually fairly counted. What is your assessment of how the election is proceeding? Do you think that we'll have the accountability in place afterwards to be able to know and have confidence that, the votes were counted, that you received all the votes that, people put for you or that Obama did? What's your sense of that?
Well, I mean, from the first day of early voting in Tennessee and West Virginia, that there's been problems. And I early voted Sunday, right when I got back from Texas. I went and rushed over to early voting, and I got there at 4 and I left at 9. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of people. It just took forever, and the three of the machines were broken, and everybody was telling everybody, oh, you're just going to vote for Obama, let me help you do it. It was, you know, kind of surreal to see it go down. But look, not every vote is going to be counted. They don't have the capacity to do it. They don't have the machines to do it. People have been waiting in line early voting in Ohio for 10, 11 hours. So, you know, in less than 12 hours, we're going to see massive amounts of voter disenfranchisement all over the country. The only way we can fight against that, as the Green Party did in 2004 in Ohio, is that we're committed to being on the ground receiving those reports. And, you know, we've committed, our candidates have committed to an organization called Stand Up, I can't remember the name of it, where we pledge to look for where we have pledged to make sure that every vote is counted. And I think that's going to take community organizers, activists, and those of us particularly in the Green Party and the third parties, because, you know, if the Democrats win, they don't care. They don't care that every vote's not counted. If the Republicans steal it, they're certainly not going to care. You know, and we saw what happened in 2000. And in 2004, we had two Democratic presidential people that promised black votes would be counted, and both times, as we would say, punked out on that. You know, and as a young generation in 2004, to see Kerry just promise and then not count them and see what happened in 2000 with the selection of George Bush, that is what we're going to have to be so vigilant about the days after. And I think there's coalitions that include people like Greg Palast and all these other voter integrity organizations that are going to be doing that. You know, and I'm proud that Cynthia sent the letter, the only presidential candidate to address it in Tennessee, when McCain votes were going to, Obama votes were going to McCain, and McKinney votes were going to Obama. But, you know, even if it wasn't us involved, we still would have did it, because everybody has a right to vote. I mean, if we want to talk about civic engagement and keeping people engaged, well, you know, you don't just count your party's votes. Everyone's vote should be counted. If you're going to engage an electorate for the last year and tell them voting is the most important thing they do, and then you tell them their vote is actually not important, we know at the end of the day it's the Electoral College that picks it. But until we can change that, when people go out in mass numbers, we need to be there to protect that, and we also need to protect against the racial attacks that are going to keep certain people away from the polls.
So I think, Rose, if I remember right, I think this is nomorestolenelections.org.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, that's
thank
it. It's linked up
at
Liberty
it.
Tree.
I'm a little tired, but that's it.
Okay. And, Rosa, I also wanted to ask, I think we're going to wrap up relatively soon here, but I wanted to ask just on a personal level for you, coming from the South Bronx and being a hip-hop journalist, I know also that you studied radical movements, the Young Lords and the Black Liberation Army, you know, and now you're running for the vice president, the office of vice president. Just how does it feel to be, you know, a woman of color running in this election, and then also, what is your assessment of what's going to happen after Tuesday? It's looking like Obama is going to win. What are your feelings in general as a longtime social justice organizer?
Well, I mean, when Cynthia asked me to run, it was pretty easy for me to say yes, because I've been mentored by great people, but particularly two of my mentors, Dr. James Turner and Richie Perez. I have talked to them about this for years. You know, what do I do? How do I make a hip-hop political agenda on the forefront? How do I, as a woman of color, break through these barriers? And they gave me lessons, and I was mentored. And you know, as a journalist with Pacifica, and in general, I've been involved in many communities and have been able to bridge a gap. I'm most proud of the fact that I could say, as an Afro-Latina woman, that Afro-Latinos in this country can actually, you know, see me not as a symbol, but someone that will unabashedly be proud of who I am and work for social justice. I mean, coming from the South Bronx, to this day, still the poorest congressional district in the country. And, you know, I know that my cousins and my family all over this country and friends, and when young women know that me and Cynthia exist, actually are angry that they didn't hear about us before. I think that's amazing. You know, so really, we're going to make history also. And we have to think about it like this. Just because they're not going to cover it doesn't mean it didn't happen. And then the goal of us is to make sure that we tell that history and keep building on it. And I really believe that, and I know that's more of a philosophical answer to that. Now, if Senator Barack Obama wins, history is made. If John McCain wins, history's made again. They stole the election for the most part. If Barack Obama wins, we cannot understand that that is definitely history for black people, for people of color, for everyone in this country. And we'll savor that, some of us won't, because we understand that he's the leader of the Democratic Party. And I will continue to be out there the next day. I'm hoping to grow the Green Party into truly multiracial, multigenerational, working class people's party. And as Bill said, if the electorate or if the Green Party is a extension, is the electorate that represents social justice, then I'm fine with doing that for, you know, the long term. And it's good, you know? And it also has allowed me, lastly, to break out of certain boxes. I think as activists, we're always put into these boxes. You're a hip-hop activist. You're Puerto Rican independent. And for a long time, I was fine with that. I identify that. I still identify as that, but I understand the world in which we live in now is very different than 1968 or even 1988. And the fact that I've been able to be in communities of all white, older, middle-class people to the poorest of South Asian people in Minnesota, it's been the best part of this whole experience. I really feel like I've talked to so many people to march with Iraq veterans against the war, and then later on that night be with the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. That's the type of leader I'm hoping to be, and that's the kind of leadership I think we should all demand of social justice people in this country.
And so I think finally, Jeremy Scahill, an independent journalist, worked with Democracy Now!, was in town last night here in Austin, and he said that what's most important is what happens after the election. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us on the left can kind of feel that way. You know, it's important to put pressure on Barack Obama and just to keep organizing in our own communities. I guess I'm just wondering where should people look? What do you think? What would you recommend as kind of a program of action for some folks after the election? And also just like, what is your website if people do want to get more information about the Green Party, whether it's tonight before they vote or afterwards?
Well, yeah. You know, I'm glad Jeremy said that. Jeremy is a good friend of mine, and we were talking a lot about that at the DNC. I think the next step is that if you're in the Green Party and are not a community organizer activist, you need to become one now. That everyone needs to go out the next couple of weeks. As particularly Senator Barack Obama gets nominated, the expectations are going to be so high. They're completely unattainable to what the left movement wants in this country. And we have to be ready to take in all of these dissatisfied people. But immediately, look, we've been clear. The one thing that may be bridging us all together as social justice activists is we want an end to this war. Although the anti-war movement has not done a good job of understanding there are people of color in this country that are anti-war, and we have a different way of organizing against that, because we're also dealing with the internal war inside the United States, particularly police brutality against people of color, young people of color in this country. So what we need to do is stop the war. And if Senator Barack Obama is inaugurated and he does not pull those troops out, we need to general strike in this country. Because $10 billion or more a year is unacceptable. Killing innocent people in a war that we know is manufactured is unacceptable. And that's definitely an issue that I think has to now cross every line in this country. And if he doesn't pull the troops out, then, you know, the Green Party is going to be ready to accept the millions of people. We have to be ready to accept the millions of people that will completely, finally, for good, abandon the two-party system.
And of course, also Barack Obama has said that he wants to actually expand the war in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And of course,
or hunt and go kill bin Laden in Pakistan, or nuclear energy. Yeah,
kind of emerging front if there is indeed any kind of pullback from Iraq. And I think the Green Party has a good position on that issue as well. An immediate withdrawal from Afghanistan, is that right?
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, Cynthia has talked about demilitarizing bases in the whole world. We're a party of peace. There's no reason the United States of America has hundreds of bases around the world. Let's have North Korea or anyone else, I mean South Korea, or anyone else have a base in America and see how they feel about that. You know, that's immediate. And as regards to Supreme Court justice, if the Senator Barack Obama gets in there, we better get a Supreme Court justice that will affirm a woman's right to choose and will also be voting that the death penalty is wrong. But I'm not sure the death penalty should be abolished. Barack Obama has said he supports the death penalty in some cases. But let's say in these 4 years, if he becomes the president, if we don't get any satisfaction to any one of our issues, the Green Party will be the major party. So we're already going in that way. And people are just going to have to be very clear about a Democratic Congress, Senate, and presidency that still won't alleviate the majority of issues of working class people in this country. We may not even get health care out of these next 4 years.
Okay, I think on that note, Rosa, thank you so much for spending almost the entire hour with us here in Austin. Wish you all the best luck tonight and also, of course, tomorrow at the polls. Thank you for calling into On the Fringe today.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you especially to all the Texas Greens. I was just out there, and Bill Holloway and Kat Swift and Don were amazing, and, you know, Texas was a... opening experience for me. As someone from the East Coast, you sometimes have a bias, and it was great to be out there and see the amazing work that's happening. So thank you. And I would tell people to go to our website. Unfortunately, mine and Cynthia's VoteTruth08.org website has been hacked, and we haven't been able to get it back online. But everybody, please go to the GreenPartyGP.org, and thank you for having me on.
Run, Cynthia, Run is still up, actually.
Oh, yes. Thank you for that. Yes. Thank you for that.
Yep.
Thanks.
Okay.
Right, okay.
Well,
thanks, Bill.
Rosa. Again, Rosa. Good luck tonight and tomorrow. And again, thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you
for having
me.
Here in the studio with Bill Holloway. He's going to continue to stay with us, and we're going to continue to talk about the election. We'll also have some information about voters' rights here in Austin and what you can do to make sure, or at least try to make sure, that your vote is counted here. So we're going to go to a quick musical break. Rosa, again, is a longtime hip-hop organizer, VP candidate with the Green Party. We play quite a bit of hip-hop on this show, and we're going to go ahead and continue in that tradition right now. This track is called Kill the Music, or actually, no, I'm going to go ahead and play Morning in America by Blue Scholars, hip-hop duo out of Seattle.